Life. Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Citizens.
Right.
World.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
It's my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, with my special guest, Darden Issoufi. Darden is the youth representative on the board of Amnesty International Canada. Darden lives in Montreal at present, but definitely has an international background. Welcome, Darden.
Welcome. Thank you, Jim.
So, we haven't been acquainted for very long here. We met up at the Cathedral Village Art Festival.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's thanks to Dave Wessel.
Yes.
So how did that happen?
When I first came in Regina, I went to the university to meet with our program dean. And I thought that I was interested by Amnesty International. And actually, she ran with a guy named Dave. And he is part of the Amnesty community in Regina.
Yes, he is.
So I met with him. We talked, and he invited me to the street fair in Regina, and then I met with you guys, which was cool.
Well, we feel so fortunate to have you come and connect with us, because, as I mentioned before, and people may not quite get that, but you're a member of the board of the French section of Amnesty International Canada. We've got two sections, French and English.
Actually, we are Belgium and Canada are the only countries of Amnesty that have two sections, one French and one in the other language. And mm-hmm. in Canada, we have the English speaking section and
right.
the French speaking section.
Okay, so it's a little weird, but it works. And Darden and myself discovered that we were both at the Montreal annual general meeting.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
4 years ago, I think it was, and that's unusual because we have separate conventions, usually. But there was a special occasion
for the 50 years of Amnesty.
Yes, yeah. So to celebrate the 50th anniversary, it was decided that we should meet together, and it was an excellent get together, and we all enjoyed it. And I don't get to Montreal very often, but that was a lot of fun.
You should. Montreal's a nice city.
Yeah.
Even Quebec too, Quebec City.
I haven't made it to Quebec yet, and that's on my to-do list for sure, for sure. But you weren't born here, though.
Actually, I was born in Switzerland, but both of my parents are from ex-Yugoslavia. My mother from Bosnia, and my father from Kosovo, but both are Albanian.
Okay, wow. So there's lots of factors here. And that's an interesting part of the world. We follow the news there, and stuff still happens. You know, that's one of the interesting things, or troubling things, you might say, about what media does. They'll follow something, and then they get tired of it, and then it's not news anymore. There's still things happening in that part of the world, but it's not on the news radar.
Just look to Bosnia. Before the war in 92... Bosnia was not quite like on the map. Nobody was knowing what is Bosnia and Herzegovina, and nobody knows where this country is. Mm-hmm. Then there was the war, which was really highly in our television, radio, newspapers. And then right after, nothing. But right after, there was big consequences of the war. Still, there was villages who were completely destroyed, women who get raped as children, and there was a high problem in Bosnia with this. Unemployment rate increased a lot, so we just don't talk about this, but there are still problems occurred.
And the little bit of irony, people were sort of familiar where Sarajevo was because of the Olympics.
Yeah.
But now, totally different situation, and Sarajevo, I think, would be... Well, I don't know how badly... Was it damaged a fair amount in the...
I went twice in Sarajevo. Actually, it's a really good city, really clean now, but before the war, it was the quality of living was the same in 75 as in Japan. It was a really, really good place to live. It was a nice city. It was the host of the Olympics, Winter Olympics game, you said it.
Right.
It was a great place. Buildings were good. Infrastructure were really good. And then the war completely destroyed it. It's slowly rebuilding, but there is a lot of poor people, problems with the Roms, problem with ethnical clans, and they have like complication with to have an independent government. So,
yeah, and this is all, I guess, a sort of long term result of the breakup of Yugoslavia after the death of President Tito.
Yeah,
yeah. So, we see this repeated often, don't we? So Yugoslavia, that happened, and then I had another situation in mind that just escaped me. Oh, I was just thinking of Saddam.
Yeah, actually in Iraq. Yeah.
In Iraq. Now, you know, they really didn't tolerate, as I'm sure Tito didn't either, anything in the way of opposition to policies and things like that. But still, you had...
The stability in the community.
Yeah, exactly, stability.
The different people were living together, looking with the Shiite and Sunni people in Iraq. There was this kind of stability in the society. Mm-hmm. And now, after the downfall of the Saddam regime, look what happened with the Sunni government 2 years ago and with the ISIS now. So it's...
Yeah. And another example would be Libya.
Yeah.
You know? Muammar Gaddafi, definitely, I don't know, a megalomaniac, you might say, whatever. But once he's gone, it's civil war basically.
And even if NATO went and bombed there is still conflict with the different milice and the armed forces into the country to get oil, to get resources, to get more power. So, yeah.
Right. And the thing is, too, that our media, I think, tends to paint the situations in simple terms. They try to simplify what's very complicated.
Look, with the Bashar al-Assad regime, at the beginning of the Arab Spring, they were all told us that the rebels were they will get over Bashar al-Assad, and now he is still on power, and there is even more conflict. There is even more wars all through Syria. So media are trying to kind of vulgarize too much the conflicts. So they simplify it in a way that they cut on some important factors, and they forget like some important facts that shouldn't be forget.
I guess the point of the matter is it is so complicated, and I don't know what can be done. We have some good columnists, you know. We have people like I don't know whether you read Gwyn Dyer very much, but there are other people like him. I read Chris Hedges once in a while, and he was here speaking. Both of them were here, actually, Gwyn Dyer and Chris Hedges. And you kind of get a feeling for the way the media operates. But it kind of raises the question, who are the media working for? What is their real objective, you know?
Actually, I think there is still hope. Like you said, there's still good journalists working and doing their job with honesty and in the proper way to do it. But when we see all the cut spendings through, like, CBC example, before there was more, like, reporters all around the world living there permanently. Mm. Now there is... We have one person in Europe, one person to cover all Asia and Middle East, one person to cover like Africa and South America. So it's getting, I think, not worse and worse, but international affairs are not so popular. We look in Europe, 12% of all the information in the media are related to international stuff. In Canada, it's 8%, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. really like lower than Europe. In Quebec, is 0.8%. So this is even worse. Like we're closing ourselves to the world.
Well, it seems to me that as the world is getting more complicated, people understand it less, and some people don't want to understand it. I don't know. I know people that don't watch the news anymore. They don't listen to the news. It makes them unhappy or upset or whatever, and they find that if they don't pay attention to the news, then they're not upset anymore.
Yeah, they're more happy.
But that's not helpful. That's not helpful, because if we don't know what's going on, then how do we tell our elected representatives what we want them to do in terms of foreign affairs?
The best example of what you just said is now we are sending armed forces in Iraq with the NATO missions to, not the NATO, but all this big coalition with the United States. And there is this kind of complete disinformation about what's happening in the Middle East. Since the 9/11, I think that media are getting lost in their values and what they should really do. So report what's happening, not what they think is happening. And the best example of this is we just talked to the Saddam Hussein massive destruction bombs that never existed, mm-hmm. but all the media, CNN, Fox TV, were telling, oh yeah, they exist. There mm-hmm. there is massive destruction arms, and we should send our armed forces there to fight against Saddam Hussein. So I think media are getting...
Yeah. And at the end of the day, they found none.
Yeah.
No weapons of mass destruction at all.
And not only the media, but the consumers of mainstream media, they are victim of kind of fraud. Like, they think they can trust the articles they read, but why wouldn't they? I mean, people think you can shift through the ideological bias, but... Actually, it's not always true, and it's not always proven, you know. And it's just because everybody's thinking this way, and people think, oh, okay, this is what's happening, but it is not. You know?
I suppose when you look at it in terms of what's happening with the media, media is so fractured now. There's so many different ways to get your entertainment, to get your news, and nobody has a monopoly on it like they used to. You know, if you went down in the States, I don't know, say 20 years ago or 30 years ago, your TV networks pretty well had a lock on the entertainment and news. So they had a little more money and they could afford to send people out, and not that they did that good a job, but they at least had the people there. And now I don't think they have the same budgets, and you end up with people that are covering vast amounts of territory and they don't have the resources.
I think the world press is affected by this kind of economic crisis that is happening since 2008, and there is a lot of spendings and cuts in every medias. And an interesting fact is that media are losing their notoriety, like their authority. I mean, mm-hmm. with the Arab Springs, all the information we had weren't from mainstream media. They were from Twitter. They were from Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those like new medias are coming, and we don't know how to deal with this. If the information is true, if it's who had proved this.
Yeah. How do you know whether what you're seeing on Twitter or Facebook is true? Who is doing it? And people who have agendas, their own personal agendas or the agendas of another organization, they could be just furthering their agenda, and we're not getting, you know, all the facts. We're not getting the truth.
And I think it's a good thing, like this, all these social networks increasing around the world, but people maybe believe it too much, and they believe without questioning, like where does the information come from? Why do I receive this information? Like, is there a purpose to receive it? And what is not shown to me? What do they hide? Like, what are they not showing to me? So these three questions you need to ask always when you read a post on Facebook or from a friend or from like a sharing. I think,
you know, one thing I get caught on every once in a while, there'll be this Facebook posting, like, oh, that's terrible or whatever, isn't that? And I fail to look at the date. And sometimes people will repost stuff from 2 years ago, and I don't realize it until, oh, I just reposted it, but it's 2 years old. So, gotta watch.
And even, like, some ministers are, like, caught in this social network kind of false information. Jason Kenney in last March shared three pictures on Twitter about the kind of forced marriage in like Middle East. Right. It was unclear, like, and he said it was for the Women's Day, and he was like, oh, we should be proud of our soldiers fighting ISIS because they are torturing women. Maybe it's true. I'm not saying it's true, but the picture were false.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the government who discovered this is a teacher in Quebec at the University of, I forget, but he said, oh, those pictures are, it's only a picture of a traditional ceremony simulating this old traditions. And this is a kind of like false information.
And this was a while ago too. I mean, they weren't new pictures.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It was like from the summer 2014 and it was shared on March 2015.
So I don't know. I think that's laziness on the part of the ministers, media people. You know, either that. No, that's it. It's basically they're not checking their facts.
And as you said, it's kind of lack of respect toward people.
Yes. Yeah. Their thought is, oh, who's going to know? Well, we have somebody in at a university in Quebec says, I know those pictures. Yeah, and I was going to say BS, but I won't say that.
And one other thing about Middle East and the medias is, in Middle East, how it works, sometimes, like, when there's a war conflict, reporters cannot go see what's happening in the front.
Right.
So they need to follow information that comes from the army, the armed forces, mm-hmm. so the U.S. Army or Canadian Army, and you never know if it's really true or not.
Sure.
With the bombing, we think that there is collateral murders, but we don't know the exact number. We don't know the exact number of bombings. So this is kind of, it's not disinformation, but it's, we don't tell us the real truth, like the real information about everything. And this should be, this shouldn't be like this.
Now, governments always want to manage the information, you know. And for that reason, journalists aren't all that popular. I mean, they'll give lip service to the idea of how important journalism is to democracy. But at the same time, they don't want the public to know some of the things that they've done that haven't worked out, or there's a little bit of a scandal here, things like that. And in fact, you know, it's inconvenient in Canada, and sometimes journalists end up in a little bit of a problem. But in other countries, journalists can end up dead, you know?
Actually, I'm not for the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, but three Al Jazeera journalists were mm-hmm. caught.
Yes.
One of them is a Canadian one.
Right.
And only because they were kind of supporting the Morsi clan, the Morsi political party. And this is completely a medieval practice to mm-hmm. put in jail somebody who tries to speak the truth, or maybe to only share its opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's getting more dangerous. The organization Journalists Without Borders, I think, reported that 2014 was the rate of dead journalists increased. Even we saw it in occupied territories and Israel. 15 actors of journalism died during the Israel bombing on Gaza. This is a lack of respect toward the freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
Or the Charlie Hebdo attack in January. Mm-hmm. This is completely incredible. Like, the three guys who did this, they were not terrorists. They were only, like, mentally ill people, or people who just want bad. But it's, I'm afraid, because we see this everywhere in the world, like journalists who get in jail, who are Raif Badawi, who tried to open, he's a blogger in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Who get in jail and had a punishment of 1,000 lashes. And
I think he's supposed to get another 50 this weekend, is he not?
This Friday, actually.
Today.
So we are waiting what's happening now. Like,
yeah.
And he get in jail because he opened a website called Saudi Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to, like, promote this democratic debate about the government, and get in jail. He was accused of apostasia, which is the change of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And they find other excuses to, like, punish the people who are, like, against their own ideas. And this is a tendency all the world that increase in China, too. Like, there is many journalists who are writing against the government and who get killed or in jail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this kind of brings up what amnesty is all about, you know, because when people like Raif Badawi end up in prison, sentenced to 10 years in prison plus 1,000 lashes, amnesty gets the word out, you know, and you can be sure that the officials in Saudi Arabia are hearing from amnesty members all around the world.
Actually, what is really interesting about amnesty is this way that amnesty finds information. We have researchers, we have people who really try to find if the information is true or not.
Right.
And after, like, yeah, it takes time. But when we have the real information, it's how we can work and how we can say, oh, this is true because of this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And all this international pressure with amnesty, in Europe and here in North America, had good consequences. Sweden cut all the diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia a few months ago.
Really?
The Austrian government is putting a lot of pressure on the king of Saudi Arabia to maybe free, to release the Raif. Our government is not working a lot.
Well, let's face it, we just finished selling them a lot of arms. We sold them some military equipment here, or they're in the process of selling military equipment. And The truth of the matter is that the Saudis are going to be using the military equipment against their own people.
And even like you, we saw the war in Kuwait, actually, they're sending arms, soldiers, and the government like really believe that it's for only defense. And
yeah,
this is incredible. It's only encouraging this authoritarian government and going against like some really basic human rights.
Yeah, and that's basically what Amnesty is doing. We're documenting these things. We're researching, we're checking our facts, and we're
sharing
documenting and sharing the information, getting it out there, and encouraging our members to make some noise, you know, and let the leaders of those countries know that we're watching. We see what's going on, and we don't agree, and it has to stop.
And one of the best examples of how the work of Amnesty has good consequences, on December, during the Greeting Cards campaign, 66% of all our cases have positive consequences.
Wow.
It can be a release, it can be a better condition in the prison, it can be a better condition for the group of people we try to defend, or for the family. So it works.
It does.
And it's not... You only need to sign petition, to be quite informed, maybe to join a community or a group or a club, and you can be the change you want to see, like I said, Gandhi.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That brings us to the end of our first half hour, Darden. I'm Jim Hutchings. This is Human Rights Radio, and I'm talking to my special guest, Darden Asufi. And he's picked some special music for us to play out of the break. So we'll go to the break here now and play some music. And I think Gord Barnes is going to be around for the second half of the show. Hopefully, we'll see. I'm putting him on the spot here now. So we'll see how soon he gets here. But we'll go to the break here now, and then, like I say, we'll have some music, and we'll continue our conversation.
Prépare-toi, petit garçon. Elle sera longue, l'expédition. Et même si on n'en revient jamais vivant, il faut marcher droit devant. Il était haut comme trois pommes et qu'il n'était qu'un tout petit bonhomme. On le poussa hors du berceau, lui mettant un baluchon sur le dos. Le bagage vide d'expérience, il posera le pied dans son existence. On n'est pas si tôt arrivé que l'on doit faire face à sa destinée. D'abord il faut franchir ce fleuve qui est l'enfance de toutes les épreuves. Là où même sa propre famille risque de le couler par la torpille. Déjà on saura si sa coque et son bateau traverseront les époques. Ou bien s'il ramera à la dure dans une chaloupe remplie de fissures. Prépare-toi, petit garçon, elle sera longue, l'expédition. Et même si on n'en revient jamais vivant, il faut marcher droit devant. Cette forêt parfois agitée, là où on peut chercher sa voie, on est souvent perdu au fond de soi. C'est en sortant de ces
vilain. L'important sera que tu sois content. Car on fait ce qu'on peut dans la vie, tout dépend de ce qu'on a comme outil. On voudrait tous être aux commandes, mais l'offre est plus petite que la demande. Que l'on soit minus ou géant, il faut être fort pour traverser le temps. Bonne chance.
Okay, that was, I love the music, but of course I am not French speaking, so you're going to have to explain to us, Darden, what the song is all about.
Actually, the group is called Les Cowboys Fringants. It's a French-Canadian group, and they're really socially involved.
Oops, they tried to start on me again.
And they're really like talking about some subject that people don't really care, politics, society, social programs, and this song called Droit Devant, it's talking about when you know, there is like injustice in the world. Nobody is like born with the same chances and opportunities, and it's telling us that how to succeed in the life, but you don't have the same tools, you don't have the same the same chances, don't have the same parents, don't have the same school, and right. Even for some, there are like society is trying to push them down, and it's a really beautiful song. Like, I would like you, if you know French, to understand all the lyrics.
I'll have to have a closer look at the song, and you know, really, when it comes right down to it, and when you think about the sentiment in the song, there's a lot of truth there. When you just look at the way we live in our society here in the West, in Canada, the United States, whatever, you think of things like the clothes we wear. Where do they come from?
Like all
Bangladesh?
Bangladesh, China, India.
You know? And you hear about the buildings that collapse, fires that kill the workers that are working under very, very bad conditions. And we're getting these clothes really cheap, and what are they getting paid? They're getting paid they're happy to have a job, and they're not getting paid very much, and they're working in these conditions. This should be something that we're thinking about when we're buying our clothes from, you know, whatever store we're at.
But not only clothes, we look cell phones. Cell phones, there's companies like Apple who have like sub companies like Foxconn, who is exploiting actually people there in China, in Africa, even children, and like women are working 50 hours a week, and they're really not well paid. They need to pay their food, and when they do a mistake, they need to pay over and over. So at the final, they don't have anything, and this is true for every single thing. Our like children, toys, and clothes, technologies. This is really sad.
I remember reading, I wish I had the article here. There's a process in the manufacture of an iPhone which involved a very dangerous chemical. And the people that were employed at that stage of the process invariably, in a very short time, developed a cancer. Every time. Guaranteed. And now we'll give the iPhone people credit. When they, like the Apple, when they found out about this, they told this manufacturing company, don't do that anymore, stop that, and they put a stop to it. But until somebody complains, until that situation comes to light, you had a person at that place in the factory who, because of the chemicals being used, was guaranteed to get cancer. And then they wouldn't look after them. They go off to the hospital and die. Or if they go to the hospital, they go someplace and die. Oh, we'll put somebody else in there and do the same thing over again. Finally, that got stopped. But we don't realize how terrible the conditions are in some of these factories overseas.
And what's sad about this is that I think is political action are really hard to do when it's related to companies and to products that are made outside the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And like the European Union tried to pass a law, and the law passes to forbid all the tungsten coming out from like bad conditions, mm-hmm. child labor,
right.
And journalists from the Monde in France wrote that it was so hard to pass this law because the lobby of cars, technology were like putting pressure on politicians to don't enact this law. And even like we look for with diamonds,
mm-hmm.
in Africa there was the Kimberley process in the 2000, I forget when exactly, but before that there was this kind of commerce of this blood
diamonds, yeah,
coming right. from bad condition Congo, child labor, slavery, and we were buying this at excessive prices, and they were slaves. This is completely incredible, and they try to put laws, they try to put like treaties, but it still occur. And mm-hmm. we try to like fair trade diamonds or fair trade chocolate or anything,
right.
but it's so hard to really know where the product is coming from.
Yeah, for sure. When you talk about chocolate, I remember listening to a program by Carol Off. Carol's on As It Happens. She's one of the hosts, and she actually went on a trip to, I think, Côte d'Azur and investigated what was going on there. And for all intents and purposes, we're getting our chocolate through pretty well slave labor. What happens at Côte d'Azur, there's some countries inland where there is nothing for people to work at. So boys would come from those countries to Côte d'Azur to work for the farmers who were growing these cocoa beans. And the farmers aren't getting paid properly. So they can hardly afford to feed the boys that are there working for them. They're getting nothing. They're working, but they're really, really being unfairly treated. The farmers are being unfairly treated. So where's the money going? It's going to the government. You've got people in there. It's terrible. And you've got companies like Nestle who are doing this kind of commerce.
And with coffee too.
And they're not worried about the people who are actually producing the goods that they are selling. So these are things that need to be addressed for sure.
But it's not only a matter of companies and governments. It's also a matter of the consumers. Laure Varidel, which is a Quebecer ecologist, wrote a book called Buying is Voting, which means you choose
right.
what to take.
Yeah.
And now there is this global movement of people. Maybe their awareness is rising, and there is more companies who are trying. Even McDonald's is trying to say, "Oh, but our beef is coming from is Canadian beef, and our coffee is not like it's not from exploited people. People are well paid, and
mm-hmm.
even companies are trying to, or IKEA, like 10 years before they were exploiting children in Pakistan to make some toys for their big market in the Western country, but now they're trying to avoid this, and they're trying to put programs to stop this child labor and kind of slavery.
And don't you think, though, that the reason, like, this is nothing new, this sort of thing. What is new is the social media we were talking about, where people can easily show us what's going on. And they do. And it gets on the internet, gets spread around, and all we can see, oh, in order for us to get this clothing or these shoes or this electronic equipment, these people are being abused.
Actually, I think this is a good point of social medias, but we need to take care where what's the information. Is maybe another company trying to destroy it, the opposition, like, you know?
Right.
And we should always take care, like, where does this information comes from? But this is a good point of social media, because when you go on Facebook, you'll see, example, picture sharings of a woman working and or like PETA. PETA increased its number of member by social networks, by sharing videos of how animals are treated in some place in the world,
right.
And how like bad is consumerism for the environment and the society. So this is like all positive effect, and I think it will. This is a good thing of social networks.
Mm-hmm. And this brings up again the point about amnesty. When we're talking about issues, you know, when Amnesty brings things up, they have been researching this. They're checking their facts. So if you hear something from Amnesty, you know we're not talking off the cuff. It's been researched. It's been documented. And if we talk to you about it as an urgent action, we know what we're talking about. You don't have to worry that somebody's making this up.
The best example with big corporation is what happened in Bhopal in India, mm-hmm. 26 years ago now, 25, or in Nigeria with the Shell, the oil
mm-hmm.
that gets spread everywhere in the Delta.
Yes,
those are important fact, and the Western society didn't care about this until like organizations such Amnesty put their nose in and mm-hmm. There's a problem. There's a mm-hmm. human rights violation here.
Right.
So we need to work. We need to join the forces to act to solve the problem. And this is a really good thing about this organization.
Yeah, for sure. And just thinking about Bhopal, of course, that's still not properly compensated for. You know, people are still suffering from that. They weren't looked after. And that's partly the government of India's fault. And partly the fault of the American company, the chemical company, that it was Union Carbide, but of course, yeah. Union Carbide has been purchased by Dow.
Dow Chemical, yeah.
Yeah.
And the problem is that Dow Chemical is based in the United States, so they will work with the American justice system, not the Indian one.
Right.
And the Indian government, I think, don't have this this force, this strength to pursue this company outside the sea and to like ask them money or reparation, mm-hmm. even reparation for all the killed people in Bhopal. This is a corporate genocide for me. In one night to kill, how many people were killed? I don't have the exact number.
Thousands. Yeah.
This is a traumatized for a society, a small city or small society.
Interesting. We were I don't know whether you're familiar with a book called Beautiful Trouble. It was written by, or edited by, Dave Mitchell, I believe, and he's been around. He's an activist, and his parents are activists, and he associates with activists. He's an activist. And I believe it's in the book. There's a group, the story about a group who, They put a false web page on the internet and made it look like it was the Dow Chemical web page. And on the official Dow, they made it look official, you know. And on this web page, they announced that Dow was going to compensate all the victims of Bhopal properly, and it course went around the world, sort of thing, and Dow had to jump in and say no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, actually I think I heard about this is kind of nice offensive in the medias, and what is interesting, this makes me think about all this movement called like Anonymous, the mm-hmm. kind of guys creating false stuff or doing this act, this cyber activism,
mm-hmm.
like behind the screen, and it works. It adds some results. It brings to some new stuff.
It's awareness. It's what it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, that's what we need. We need to keep people interested in what's going on in the world. Like I told you earlier, I know people that don't watch the news, you know, because it upsets them, you know. But we need people to be upset. We need people to get motivated, and do something about the things that should not be happening in the world.
but in a way it's more easy to control people who are not upset and people who just don't care about what's happening than people who are aware of, oh, there is corruption, oh, there is human rights violation, oh, there is problems here and there. And those people are more like hard to control and hard like to keep in the box.
Yeah, and I don't know, in a way you have to play, you almost have to play the game. I'm just thinking about what governments sometimes do. I'll put it in very general terms. You have people that are not that aware, so you can kind of invent an issue or blow a particular part of an issue out of proportion and say, well, we're going to do this against that. And what they're going to do is maybe will not do any good whatsoever or may even do bad, but they present it as themselves solving a problem in order to get votes.
And the most obvious example I find is the Bill C-51.
Oh, yes.
The Senate enacted, I think last Tuesday, a law to supposedly protect the Canadian society from terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And this law is going against our basic human rights and going against private life.
Yes.
And now they can search on your cell phone or on your computer without asking you. We are giving more power to the police corps, like small cities,
yep,
to find you and to control you. Before it was like the RCMP or the Canadian
CSIS, whatever the security.
Mm-hmm. And now.
Well, they would have to go before a judge. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
They could do this stuff before, but they would have to go to a judge.
And to get the paper off.
And convince the judge that this needed to be done. Now they don't have to do that.
And this makes me fear a lot because I know where this will bring us in like 10, 5, 20 years, you know? This can be really dangerous. Even though if it's not the conservative government to it, on the power, it may be another one, but it can be really dangerous because you're giving too much power
exactly
to some people, and they can badly use them against our society.
Yeah, and the other aspect is there is no oversight. You know, they've got a, right now they have a committee, and I don't think this has changed, but they have a committee that meets once a year and reviews some stuff and say, oh, that looks okay to me, and then you're done for another year, you know? So it really, in effect, for all intents and purposes, no oversight at all.
And you were talking about people who are not aware. Like, people are saying, oh, but I have nothing to hide, so this law is okay. It's like saying, oh, I don't care about freedom of speech. I don't have anything to say.
Exactly, yeah.
You cannot think this way. You need to, oh, but it can have consequences, not on me, but on other people.
Right.
There can be a racial or political profiling, and there can be, like, many kind of other types of violations. So it's really, really dangerous. And I think Benjamin Franklin said, when a society is ready to put over its freedom for more security, the society deserves no one of both.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth there. I think, yeah, I don't know, people. I'm at a loss to explain. I guess people just don't want to get involved, or they don't want to have to think, or they don't want to be upset or whatever, when there are things they should be upset about.
I don't know if it's the people of the kind of all this you were talking about. People just don't care anymore about news. People don't watch the news. They don't try to understand what's happening outside. They don't try to understand to think out of the box. And I don't know what this can be related to, but maybe, like,
I think the thing is, it's hard for them to realize how it affects them. If it affects them directly, okay, fine, then they're interested. But if it doesn't affect them directly, then they're not worried about it. Yeah.
But this is a true fact for everything, basically. Like, when there's a conflict in another country, nobody like gives attention, but when there's a conflict in your like city council or something like this, mm-hmm, everybody is aware of like who is Rufford, what is Rufford doing, or
you
know. But nobody knows what is happening in Libya or Syria or even in Palestine and Israel.
And the list goes on. The list goes on. There's so many. Well, one example of stuff that's going on that you might not be aware of is in South Africa. There is a growing tide of, I guess you would call it, xenophobia, where anybody who is not from South Africa, they're in danger of being attacked, being killed, because the local people there see them as people who are coming to take their jobs or you know that sort of thing. It's very dangerous, and the government is concerned. But
in South Africa, this fear of strangers is mostly because of ignorance. People are they fear of what they don't know, and this is what I see is happening. Even though in Canada and Quebec, people who have this fear of immigration or of other people, and we more and more see xenophobic actions in Quebec, and this is mostly due of this lack of education or maybe this lack of open mind.
Bottom line is, we got to do the best that we can to educate ourselves and others.
Yeah,
that's what Amnesty is all about. And we've just about run out of time here, believe it or not.
Sorry.
Very close. So it was really good to have you here. But you're not going to be here for long. Where are you headed next week?
I'm leaving for Montreal on June 16th and back to normal life, normal occupation, family, friends.
So are you going back to school or do you have a job or what's going on?
I have a job. I don't know actually what I'll do exactly this summer, but I'll try to work. And then school again.
Back to school. Yeah. Okay, yeah, man. Well, Amnesty can be a full-time job sometimes.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Okay, good to have you here, Dardan.
Thank you very much.
Dardan Soufi is from Montreal, and you've got a real world view, I think, just because of your background and your family. And I think it's really, you do some valuable work for Amnesty, and you're on the board of Amnesty International Canada, French-speaking section, and I know you must. We didn't even talk about that. We should have talked about that too. So we'll have to do this again the next time you're in Regina.
I hope.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."